Welcome to You Totally Made That Up. We are a bi-weekly history podcast that tells you the wildest, craziest, nuttiest stories from yesteryear. Ones that sound like somebody must have totally made them up. But they're all true. And we especially like the ones that have supernatural, paranormal, woo-woo elements. So those parts may only be true to the people who lived them. We don't go for the lore says or the legend goes, though. We want dates and names and all the facts that we can find. Basically, we like the weirdest and strangest stories from history. And I am Nash.
And I am Tiff.
We are your hosts. We are not historians. We are merely researching and presenting you stories in a delightful way. And we are also not podcasters who simply read from Wikipedia and giggle. If that is your jam, we are not for you, but please do give us a go anyhow. Don't forget to keep listening after the episode's over to hear the outro, which will tell you how to get hold of us, where to find us on social media, and we love hearing from you. These are different, though. These are the mini episodes that sometimes come between the big ones. We call them spooky snacks, though they don't always have to be spooky, and it doesn't matter if these are just legends and lore. We sneak in facts where we can, but nobody cares. They're all for fun. And we want you to join in on that fun. These can be based on submissions of your personal, family, or hometown stories, as well as suggestions for topics you'd like to hear us discuss. And then sometimes they're about things that we want to talk about that aren't long enough for a regular episode, or that are just timely, maybe related to something that's in the news, or maybe related to a holiday. For this one, we had it flagged for part of a full episode, but as I think you'll see, it doesn't really fit with anything else. It is a tale unto its own. I don't know all the details, but I know enough, and boy howdy, this one's a winner. So Tiff, take it away.
I shall. I'm going to take it. Let me just ask you, do you like being outside? Do you like doing outdoorsy activities?
As a general rule, no. Well, I take that back. It depends on the weather. How about that? That's my answer. Yes, when it's pleasant. That is my answer.
Okay. All right. And why don't you like going outside? Is it like bugs? Is it sweating? Is it what? What is it?
Probably the sweating. But yeah. Bugs. You bring up an excellent point. Like in the, especially like now, like in the summer months. Summer probably aggravates me more than winter in terms of weather.
Okay. It's understandable. I get it. Let's talk about some of the perils of just being outside, because being outside sucks. I'm like you, you know, if it's a nice day out, let me just sit outside in the sun and enjoy it. But if something's crawling on me, if I'm sitting there dripping in sweat and can't breathe because the air is like soup, or, you know, no, I want no part of it. Now let's think about how terrible it was for the wife of farmer Ellen Crouch. We don't get her name, which is also kind of unfortunate for her. She was outside enjoying the day, but she didn't have problems like sunburn or allergies or bug bites or getting shit on by a bird. Now, on this particular day, on the 3rd of March in 1876, in Olympia Springs, Kentucky, she was smacked by chunks of meat as they fell from the sky.
Okay, well...
So add that to the list of reasons why being outside sucks.
Because I was thinking about weather, and I was like, what about rain? No, I actually like rain. I like the sound of rain on tin roofs. I like, you know, spring showers aren't bothersome to me. Like, I don't mind being slightly damp. Does not bother me. But this, yeah, meat rain. Meat rain's
Yeah. So on that day, 145 years ago, she was outside. Like I said, enjoying the day and making some soap when suddenly a storm came out of nowhere, showering her with those chunks of meat. Quote, the meat, which looked like beef, fell all around her. The sky was perfectly clear at the time, and she said it fell like large snowflakes. So how big were some of those snowflakes? Well, some were small. Several were about 2 inches by 2 inches, which is about 5 centimeters by 5 centimeters. And at least one was 4 by 4. Or 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters.
Yeah, she said it fell like snowflake. No, it didn't.
Right? What kind of snowflakes are falling in those parts? Jeez. I don't know. And again, quoting Mrs. Crouch, when the flesh began to fall, I saw a large piece strike the ground close by me with a snapping-like noise when it struck. The longest piece that I saw was as long as my hand and about half an inch wide. It looked gristly, as if it had been torn from the throat of some animal. Another piece that I saw was half round in shape and about the size of half dollar. That's not snow, lady.
That is not.
Maybe she never saw.
Say again, where was, I think I heard you right, but tell me one more time, where is this?
Olympia Springs, Kentucky.
Kentucky, okay, because I That's what I thought. And I, of course, have to make the obligatory Kentucky Fried Chicken reference. I'm just going to leave it there. But, you know, was it cooked?
It just had to be brought up.
Yeah, it just had to be brought up. I mean, clearly it was not cooked, but I'm still hung up on it fell like snowflakes.
Like, I'm imagining, you know, she says snowflakes, and I'm like, oh, somebody's sprinkling ground beef all around her. But no, we'll get there. So I didn't read about her having any kind of Chicken Little, the sky is falling type of reaction. She did, however, make sure to survey the amount of meat that fell around her, and she noted that there was approximately a horse cart worth of meat. It sounds like a decent amount. There's no, like, conversion chart for horse carts worth of meat. It sounds like a lot. And the meat was all over their yard. It was approximately spread about like a football field. And there were pieces that were impaled on the fence. They had their pet cat that was like, woo, party, time to eat. I don't know. It was everywhere. It sounds like a really bad scene from a low budget horror film from the 80s. So word spreads, and a gentleman by the name of Harrison Gill visits the next day and basically describes the same scene that Mrs. Crouch had, with the presence of the meat sticking out of the fences and scattered across the ground. But he gets named and quoted in the New York Times as someone whose veracity is described as unquestionable. And I imagine it's probably just because he's a man. This poor woman who had the meat thrown all over her, we don't even get her name. This guy shows up and he's unquestionable. I had issues with some of the sexism of this story as I went on.
You know, these women's and their meat showers, how they're always going on and on about the wieners falling from the sky. Yeah.
All the time. And then a couple other men that were also noted visitors actually showed up and they sampled the meat. They decided that it must have.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Carry on. I'm sorry. Listen, we don't eat unsolicited meat. Full stop. I don't care if it's coming from the sky. I don't care if somebody's knocking on your door. You know, do you have a moment to discuss this message about meat from? No.
Don't eat unsolicited meat.
No.
Put that on a bumper sticker. I love it. But they did. They were like, it's got to be venison or mutton, which is sheep. But then a bunch of other guys were like, no, this is bear, or maybe it's beef. Basically, everybody threw their hat into the ring about what kind of meat it was, and there was no consensus. Nobody could figure it out. And that's that. This happened, you know, it was kind of big talk for a few months, and then a lot of people lost interest, and they're like, yeah, that happened, I suppose. What are you going to do? Keep on living and making soap in your yard. Well, there were a couple initial explanations. And then there's a conclusion that most people kind of go with today. So here's a little bit about what some people said happened. First one that pops up is about 3 months after what was called the Kentucky incident. I feel like that's kind of underplaying what happened there. This gentleman by the name of Leopold Brandis, he received and analyzed some of the specimens that had been preserved. He announces that the meat isn't even meat. Quote, "At last we have a proper explanation of this much talked of phenomenon. It was reported in the Scientific American that year. It has been comparatively easy to identify the substance and to fix its status. The Kentucky wonder is no more or less than no stock." So, of course, let's discuss no stock for a moment.
Yeah, please, because what?
You don't know what the fuck that is?
At all, no. Not even the first clue, no.
Okay, well, maybe you know it by one of its many nicknames. Star jelly, star shot, star slime. Witch's butter or witch's jelly?
I've heard of star jelly, but witch's butter, is that what you said?
Witch's butter.
All right.
Yep. Now, all of those little star names came because they believe that these alien-looking blobs came from the dust of shooting stars. And witch's butter, witch's jelly? Witch's jelly is a type of nickname for a fungus. The real name, which is Tremella mesenterica. And witch's butter is a nickname for another type of fungus, and its real name is Exidia glandulosa. If you Google these and see what they look like, the former is yellow and the latter is black, and neither of them look anything like meat. The star blubber stuff, it looks like gross, gooey seaweed. It just looks mucusy, you know? Now, it's a type of cyanobacteria that forms these colonies that are protected by gelatinous substance. So that's where it gets that slimy, nasty feeling and appearance. Now, when it's dry, it doesn't really look like anything. It just looks like dried up greenery. But then when it gets wet, when it gets rained on, that's when it kind of sucks in that water and absorbs it and turns back into that jelly nastiness. Now, they believed that Nostoc floated on the breeze until it rained, and that's when it fell from the sky like hail. So...
But was it raining that day?
It was not raining that day. Uh-huh. That's a huge issue with that theory.
I am smart.
You are so smart. Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, it's noted. Like, that was the big thing, is that the skies were clear. The other big thing is that, you know, this stuff, like I said, it kind of looks like seaweed. So it's like a bluish, greenish color. And the meat was meat colored. You know, when I tried to look up some more about this guy, this Leopold guy, I couldn't really find any credentials for him. So I think he was some kind of like a basement, you know, garage scientist that knew some people. And that's kind of how he got his name and that theory out there. Next one. Oh, I love this one so much.
Wait, Bella, you said garage scientist, like, you know, Leopold, he sells like homemade condoms out of his garage. You can get some meth while you're there. Like, that's all I'm picturing.
Hey, you know, some things change, some things stay the same. Garage scientists, they've been there. They've been there.
That's right.
So this next theory is called cosmic meat. And this comes from a gentleman by the name of William Livingston Alden. And here's a quote from...
These names. I'm sorry. Not a one of them's named John or Jim or... They've all got these just elaborate, like, names. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, these are very serious people with very serious ideas. Yes,
they're very serious.
All right. Very serious. Now, listen to this very serious thing we've got going on here. The obvious conclusion is that the Kentucky shower of meat was really a meteoric shower, going on to reason that since meteoric stones constantly revolve around the sun, that, quote, there revolves around the sun a belt of venison, mutton, and other meats, divided into small fragments, which are precipitated about the earth.
The obvious conclusion.
Obvious.
It's obvious, right. Darling. It's obvious.
Now, he continues to explain that previously, scientists had theorized that meteors were the result of exploded planets. So the meat shower could be inhabitants who formerly occupied the wrecked planet. Basically, it was exploded livestock from another planet that found its way to Earth.
Aliens. It's aliens. Is what he's saying. But I love, though, that it's specifically, okay, planet explodes. Let's say Earth explodes and sends debris out into the ether. Okay, guess what? It ain't just the cows that are going out there. It would be us as well. So why the specificity of alien livestock? But oh, heavens no, we're not cannibalizing aliens themselves. And no, so is there a planet that's just like a giant farm? Like that just, that's all that's... I have so many questions.
Maybe there was a planet. It's exploded, Dash. I hate to break it to you.
We wouldn't know if there was a cow planet out there. We wouldn't know. You're right.
We wouldn't. Well, it's gone now.
Viva la moo.
Now, full disclosure on that theory. William was a writer for the New York Times. He wrote in both the editorial and the humor sections. So he could have just been having a laugh.
That's true.
But he's not here for me to ask him. So it's part of the theory.
Yeah, you're right. But I'm with you. We've seen some wham dingers come up in some editorials, especially over the past few years, where you're like, is any of this based in any sort of fact at all? But yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to just trust that he was goofing around.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. But we can't say. Another wonderfully odd and really gross theory is that not too far away from the Crouch Farm, two gentlemen, possibly brothers, kind of depends on who you're asking, were engaged in a knife fight. And as they fought, a twister came by, picked them up, and swirled them around until they were diced up pretty well, and all the chunks that they were slicing off of each other eventually flew into the Crouch's farmland.
This is so dumb. These people are dumb.
Oh, man. I mean, I so want to just stop right there. Does it get better than Twister fighting brothers?
Something tells me that it's gonna. Something tells me that the truth is gonna be a real winner.
Oh God.
Because honestly, okay, but honestly, if this were in modern times, I'll tell you, my gut instinct would be to say this was a dump, you know, from a plane.
Oh, like, yeah, okay.
Some sort of trash dump, not necessarily, because, hello, you'd be able to identify if it was human waste. That would be
You've
easy to identify.
You've seen Joe Dirt, right?
Oh, many, many years ago.
God. He walks around with this giant meteor that he finds, and then eventually finds out that he has it tested that it is plain, you know, plain waste. And he's been, like, hugging it and kissing it, and he's all like, I got the poo on me.
That's it. Or, oh God. And now I've thought of, do you remember this was, it's been quite, maybe 10 years or so, I would hazard a guess.
Mm-hmm.
I would put in text to speech guy to correct it, but it's irrelevant and I don't care enough to do it. But do you remember when the Dave Matthews Band, they were on tour and that the bus, somebody made the decision it would be a good idea to dump the bus. And they were going over a bridge. And I don't quite understand the logistics of this, because to me, I would have thought, well, did it just go over the paved, you know, where people were driving on the bridge? I guess it comes out the side because it came just right in time as a ferry boat of tourists was passing under this bridge.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, give that a Google. Can you imagine?
I do remember.
But anyway, I say all that to say, again, I like the shortest, straightest line between two points. I like the simplest explanation to be, you know, that's what I find most believable. So, yeah, if this were in modern times, I would have said this was a plane maybe dumping something they shouldn't have dumped over while they were maybe coming in for a landing or taking off or whatever. Hell, cargo. Maybe cargo fell out of a plane.
Sure.
It's something to that effect. But I mean, we're in the 1800s. So, oh God, it's the 1800s. Once again, if you got that on your bingo card, there you go.
Yeah. Oh God.
Anyway, so I digress. Okay. Blown up alien planet. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Knife fight Twister.
Fight Twister. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Check. You know, we've got all that. We've gone through all of that. So now we'll get into what's been accepted as the prevailing theory. This is courtesy of Dr. L.D. Kastenbein. And I really was trying so hard for a while to come up with a way to kind of skirt around the big reveal to lead you guys into it. But there's no way. I can't do it. So here we go. Here it is, you guys. Bird vomit. Specifically, turkey vulture or turkey buzzard vomit. And Nash, how do I keep having this brought up? Like, how many times?
Animals regurgitating things? Yeah.
Specifically birds. Just like birds. Yeah. Like, this better not become, like, my brand. This
For old listeners. For old listeners, they know exactly what you're talking about. For newer listeners, you're just going to have to backtrack. And I think this is the third time some sort of animal vomit has followed you to yet another episode.
Yeah. Yeah. What the hell? Back to the birds. Here we go, you guys. Let's learn a little bit about these big old birds and why they may have spewed all over poor Mrs. Crouch. The turkey vulture can be found all over across Central America, South America, Mexico, the United States, and a little bit into Canada. And they're pretty large. The body length is 25 to 32 inches. Their wingspan is 5.5 to 6.5 feet. And they weigh 2 to 4.5 pounds on average. They have dark feathers everywhere except for their head, which is bald and bright red. They feast on the meat of dead animals, and they hunt using their keen sense of smell. And they'll eat anything from a large animal like deer or like a cow to something small like a lizard or a snake. You'll find them near rivers kind of eating dead fish that have washed up. They seem to prefer the meat of herbivorous animals. However, they are also able to eat plant matter like vegetation along shores, pumpkins, crops, live insects, and other smaller invertebrates. But for the most part, they're not terribly picky about what they're going to eat as long as it's dead. Turkey vultures can often be found along roadsides, cleaning up that roadkill, and they can actually seek out and identify a carcass that's up to 24 hours old. Yum. They're going to eat what they can.
And isn't the classic sign of perhaps there is a human corpse somewhere, like, you know, like you say, outside the road or in a desert, if you see vultures circling, you should probably go check it out. Okay, so, I mean, they could have been hacking up corpse as well. So, sorry.
That's true.
Sorry, everybody.
That's
sorry,
true.
Not sorry.
They could have been.
They could have been. They could have been horking up some human.
They could have.
I'm just saying. Okay.
Yeah, they're pretty good. I don't want to say it hunting because they're not like tracking something that's moving. It's dead, but they've got such a good sense of smell that they can identify something that's far enough away that's still fresh, freshly dead, mostly dead. Yeah, let's go with that. And then now let's get into some interesting stuff about how their digestive systems work. Their stomach acid pH level is just above zero, which is lower than car battery acid, but is 100 times more concentrated than human gastric acid. Their stomach acid can dissolve metal, and it can digest almost any organism. The most important ones are bacteria and viruses and gross toxins that lead to things like botulism, anthrax, rabies, cholera, even polio. So they will eat just about anything that's dead and rotten, including animals that died from infections that would usually make other predators sick. Now, by consuming the rotten and diseased meat, they actually decontaminate it by putting it through their stomach acid. And this actually helps to prevent the spread of disease to both humans and other animals. So they're doing good things for the environment by ingesting this bacteria and killing it rather than letting it enter the ecosystem. So thanks, vultures. That's pretty awesome.
Great.
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 While we're talking about their digestive system, here's another cool thing that they can do. They can regurgitate their food. And not just like, you know, the mama bird feeding their young kind of way. They have a defense mechanism. So thanks to the high acid content and the surprise element of being able to project vomit on a predator, this works well to keep them pretty safe. And other birds, herons and gulls, they'll do this too. Now, it's not like projectile vomit. It's not like, you know, the movies where you see the hose of puke coming out.
Right, right.
It's kind of more of them coughing up a lump of semi-digested meat, but because of their high acidic stomach acid, the vomit is also very acidic, and combining that with the raw, rotten meat that they're munching on, it's very, very unpleasant and can sting, you know, whatever's attacking them, gets in their eyes, onto their skin, whatever it is that's going after them, they're not going to have a pleasant time when they've got that puke on them.
So they're like those little raptors in Jurassic Park. I mean, I know that came from... I know, don't write in. I'm aware that those come from like pit glands. Okay, so shut up. But I'm saying the concept of the burning type of, you know, okay.
Right. So now how does all of this affect Mrs. Crouch? Well, the theory goes that a flock or kettle of these vultures were just kind of chilling nearby, feasting on some decaying carcass, when something must have prompted them to take flight. And just like you're supposed to wait 30 minutes after eating before you swim, which, side note, is bullshit, whatever.
I was about to point that out, but go ahead.
You can't suddenly take flight on a full stomach. So what else are you going to do? You got to hack it up. And it's just so that you know, it's not too crazy to kind of put that together. Here's a quote from Joe Walston, who's the vice president for field programs at the Wildlife Conservation Society. Vultures tend to gorge themselves when they eat because they don't know when they'll get their next meal. This means that they have to sit and digest for a while after feeding. But if something startles them and they need to get airborne quickly, they have been known to vomit to lighten the load. They'll even vomit in the air as they're taking off if they have to. So yeah, the idea here is that the vultures all took flight and vomited this meat all over the Crouch farm in a, quote, shower of quivering flesh, which sounds like a whole different kind of issue.
Oh, no, that's a discussion for another time and another. No, but that makes better sense, because what was going through my mind when you started telling all this was, then why was it largely whole? How were the taste testers able to sample it if it was to that digested state that it would be, so like you say, like that stinging effect? I thought, but this makes sense if this was something that happened very quickly and it hadn't been near enough time to digest it. I'm also picturing like a group of schoolgirl vultures like, oh my God, oh my God, Cindy, I'm going to puke. Don't you dare. Because if you do, I will. And so we'll bridge it. Oh my God. Please don't puke. And then when I'm, and then in succession, they all,
that's what happens too. When one of them does it, it's a chain reaction. They all will do it.
I love it. I love learning that vultures have the constitution of a 14-year-old girl. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a second to remind you too, that people did eat that meat. People ate it. Gross. Now, Dr. Kastenbein did say that at least one of his samples did smell like rancid mutton. I have a hard time. I had such a hard time after this with just the stomach acid and the rancid meat, and that people were like, yeah, we got to find out what this is. And so they ate it. Oh my God. Especially after it was left out.
Right. There's no refrigerators. You're right. Yeah.
I'm having a really hard time with people just ingesting this meat. And there was a horse cart full of it. So there was a lot of meat. What happened to it all?
I'm with you. I love that unit of measurement. A horse cart full of meat. Oh. Not, hey, maybe a bushel, maybe a barrel. Like, you got stuff that's more.
Right.
I don't know, a horse cart. Okay.
I'm going to start using that in my daily life now to confuse everyone. At this point, now that we have the idea that the vultures vomited their meal, so we kind of know where the meat came from. But now the mystery is, what kind of animal did the meat come from? And what would it have tasted like? Back when the original event occurred, some people looked at the pieces because there was, you know, it wasn't just like chunks of the muscly meat. There was cartilage. There was other tissue. So, of course, some people did see it and say, oh, that's human remains. Whatever. Again, it goes back to, I guess, that knife fight. The remaining samples eventually either disappeared. Like I said, people got bored with it. They became compromised just because they weren't stored well. But Kurt Godey, a professor at Transylvania University in Lexington, Kentucky, happened upon one sample of the meat while he was looking through some school archives. Now, he had known about the meat shower story, and so he saw it and was just like super pumped to look into it and try to help solidify the vulture theory, which he did. But he didn't stop there. He sent a sample of the meat in for genetic testing, but age and contamination prevented being able to identify it. So, of course, naturally, his next step was to send a sample to a taste lab in Cincinnati.
Wait. Stop.
What?
Stop
what?
Everything. What? Stop everything. What year was this?
Let me double check. This was early 2000s.
Had somebody, like, cured it? Like, maybe, you know what I'm talking about? Like, brine? Had somebody...
If you look it up, because we're not putting pictures up anymore, it's in a glass bottle, so it had been preserved in...
Like, formaldehyde or something?
Yeah, glycerin and something else.
Oh, that's true, because they couldn't have sent it to a taster if it was in formaldehyde. It would have killed him. But, okay, so like some sort of, okay.
Yeah.
I don't care. Y'all, I don't care. Early 2000s, and this is from 8. Oh, no. No.
So they sent it to a taste lab in Cincinnati. They broke it down to the chemical compounds and made it into jelly beans using the flavor profile that they created.
No.
So this professor takes home about 1,000 or so of these bad boys, of these jelly beans. And here's his quote on how it tastes. The taste, frankly, is so vile. I remember thinking it was really strong. The first one I ate tasted like chemicals and sugar. The first one. He ate more than one. Okay. And he did not keep them all to himself. In 2007, he went to Court Days in Mount Sterling, which is a huge outdoor festival, and he handed them out to people. He hoped that there might be a consensus on the flavor from anyone who was willing to try them. These were like dark red jelly beans. Some people said that the flavor reminded them of raw bacon, which who's eating raw bacon, you guys? Okay.
This story is, I can't.
And somebody else said that it tasted like a strawberry pork chop. What is that?
These are like those shitty Harry Potter jelly beans. Everybody's like, oh, these are the best. I'm like, you're a liar. No, they're not. They're gross.
They are. They're so gross. So he kind of, as he went through, because he did have to eat more than one, he describes them as tasting like heavily sugared bacon with a metal aftertaste.
That's fair.
Yeah. I still don't know if that helps to identify what kind of meat it is, but
at all,
it
no.
just seems like it tastes pretty bad. Aside from the rancid jelly beans, what might be my favorite thing to come out of this whole story is a children's book called The Meat Shower, a mostly true tale of an odd and somewhat edible occurrence by a gentleman named Mick Sullivan, who does a children's history podcast called The Past and the Curious. We are not affiliated with them. It was just, I came about this through research. So Shout out to that podcast.
And what a wonderful title. And mostly edible. I love that.
Listen to the summary. It's the best. And you can go, okay, you guys, you can go to his website and he's got a link on there so you can watch him on YouTube. He actually reads the story. So, I mean, you can buy the book, of course, to support him, but he reads the story on a YouTube video.
And we'll link you to his stuff. Definitely.
So here's the summary of the book. The story is told by a piece of the very old meat who now sits in a lonely jar on a museum shelf. He reflects on his humble beginnings and speculates about all the possibilities of how he came to be. Just how and why did chunks of meat rain from the sky 150 years ago? You guys, the story is told from the perspective of the piece of meat.
From the meat. I love this. I love this so much.
Oh my gosh. So,
hey, it's a better protagonist than most of the shit that's out there right now.
It's so true. It's so true. And it's funny. It is. It's a funny little book. But there you go, you guys. That's my spooky snack about the Kentucky meat showers. And it was vultures barfing up their food to make a quick getaway. And it's gross.
I'm surprised that Crouch, did you say is her name?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. I'm surprised Mrs. Crouch didn't immediately default to the typical, not to stereotype Kentuckians, but I'm definitely stereotyping country folk in the 1800s. She didn't default to, it's a message from Jesus. Now, I'd hesitate to speculate on what Jesus's message would have been by dropping meat upon her property. But I'm surprised that somebody didn't think of, well, slightly magical thinking in the whole, it came from outer space, like that whole train of thought. So, yeah, but I'm really surprised that somebody didn't go, oh, it's a sign from the Lord.
I know. I was totally expecting to come across some religious camp suddenly shows up and they're parking outside their property and this turned into a big whole thing.
Apocalypse. Yeah, right. This is, yeah.
But no, it was just like, yeah, that's a hell of a lot of meat. What? I don't know. Something else that's interesting. There actually is a full Wikipedia page about animals falling from the sky or animals raining from the sky. Now, I didn't come across any specific meat showers. Again, you know, there have been other strange incidents where large groups of fish and birds and things like that have kind of rained down on people. But I'm kind of wondering about the vultures, especially with the turkey vulture being spread over such a huge geographic area.
This has to have happened before.
Right. How come we're not hearing about more vulture vomit incidents?
Do people just shrug and go, eh?
Are you keeping it to yourselves?
Or maybe, there has to be more stories like this. I mean, in areas where they are more commonly seen, perhaps this is like, oh yeah, or they were sighted at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but, and I'd have to look it up, but I feel like, yeah, there have been instances when storms have, certainly ocean area places and islands where storms have picked up.
Yeah.
Like little schools of fish and whatever, and you find them like littered on the beach and stuff like that. But
yeah,
I don't know. But I'm with you. There's no way this hasn't happened before.
Right.
Maybe just not in somebody's front yard, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. I'm very curious because I was like, okay, this, if it's known that vultures do this and it's kind of expected of them, how come nobody's talking about it?
How come? Oh, I'll tell everybody that would listen.
I'd right?
be like, guess what? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's it. That's my spooky snack. I wouldn't say it's spooky. Pukey. It's a pukey snack.
Exactly. pukey snack. Oh, I was about to say, we just like alliteration. We should have come up with another name for these, but I like snack. So, and pukey snack wouldn't apply to all of them. Spooky doesn't apply to all of them. So, hey, if you guys have a suggestion, short snack, maybe short snack.
Yeah.
We can start calling them that. I don't know.
We'll figure it out. You guys let us know.
That's right. And again, keep listening. You'll hear how to let us know. And that's it. We hope you enjoyed.
Thanks for listening. This is where the catchphrase goes.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. As a reminder, you can check out our sources for each of the episodes at our blog, along with any other supplemental things we think you might enjoy. Just head over to youtotallymadethatup.tumblr.com, and in the menu, click on show notes.
We're also on Twitter at YTMTUpodcast and on Instagram at youtotallymadethatup. You can contact us at any of those places, and you can also email us. That address is youtotallymadethatup@gmail.com.
We love hearing from you, whether it's ideas for episodes, your own personal or family stories, telling us what we can do better, and telling us what we should keep on doing.
And if you're enjoying the podcast, please consider taking a moment to rate and review on your platform of choice. Or if you know someone who may like our content, send them our way.
We're so grateful for our listeners and would love to add even more people to our wild podcast family.